Hello and welcome to episode 59 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
And this is Tank.
And that's it this week. Tank, how's your week been, buddy?
It's been good. I'm trying to think of something exciting.
You're in Japan. Everything's exciting. Like, everyone's exciting. Wearing spiky hair and colors, right?
Yeah, that's just what they're born with. The anime and the video games, that's all accurate pictures. Everyone's spiky hair. Touch it, you get stabbed in the hand.
Eyeballs half the size of their heads.
Very dramatic. Yell all the time. Not really. It's actually very quiet. There's people who are very surprised, by subways. You get on a subway and nobody's talking. It's just silence.
Huh. Yeah. That's funny. Do they have Halloween over there?
Yes. It's apparently just recently got popular. But I have gone now to 3 Halloween parties. I will have one more on Monday.
Cool.
Yes. Today I went as either a farmer on his day off or a Nike model. The reason being, my wife was a strawberry, and so I went as the farmer who grew the strawberry, but I wasn't dressed as a farmer, so I was on my day off. I was dressed in a Nike pullover, so there's the Nike model.
Nothing like a good lazy costume. My wife has gotten me into actually wearing costumes now, which is great, because I don't care enough about costumes to put in the initiative to make a costume. And as you can see, I have, for the radio audience, they can see that I have a large tuft of hair sticking straight up. I went as Donkey Kong. So last night we had our church had a Fall Fun Fest thinger. Not a Halloween party or anything. It was Fall Fun Fest. We keep
Fall
it holy.
Fun Fest.
So I have, and we used a lot of hairspray. So I even slept on this, and it's keeps
so good. Yeah, anyway. I guessed peacock because it's straight up in the air like a peacock tail.
It really is. For some follow up this week, actually it would have been last week, but I wasn't here last week, so. As far as the modesty discussion that we had 2 weeks ago, David McCookie had some thoughts on modesty that I thought are worth bringing up. He has a blog over at endtherestof.it, and I have links to 3 of his posts regarding modesty up there. Quite snarky, quite long-winded, as David McCookie is wont to do, but they're worth reading. And I don't think I disagree with him on anything there. The thing with the modesty discussion is, like, people tend to emphasize different extremes of the arguments when the reality is somewhere in the middle. And I will fully admit that I emphasized more the male responsibility rather than the female responsibility this time around, just because I feel like the male responsibility thing just never gets talked about, at least in my circles. So, anyway, worth reading. Check him out.
And if it wasn't said, David McCookie is one of the hosts of Helvetic, a podcast.
Yes.
And he's also hangs out in the Slack channel quite a bit.
Yeah. Yep. He is a slacker for life, for sure. But yeah, I appreciate Helvetic very much. I listen to it every time a new episode is released. So, check that out, too. I'll put a link to Helvetic in the show notes as well. I guess we'll move on to the news. And this is Tech You Should Know, where we bring you a few tech news stories from the past week that we want to talk about. A little over a week ago, there was an unprecedented series of distributed denial-of-service attacks, or DDoS attacks, that took down a number of big websites including Reddit, Twitter, Amazon, Spotify, and many others. The culprit? It came from inside your house! The Internet of Things, such as your Wi-Fi-connected toaster or video doorbell, seems to have been responsible for the bulk of it. The attack was likely against a customer of a large DNS provider, DIN, and ended up taking down DIN as well as any site that used it for DNS services. Security on Internet of Things devices has never been great, but hopefully this is a wake-up call for manufacturers to be tougher on security with your light bulbs.
That's something I never really thought about, but there are many, many things connected to the internet. So it's a great way to do a DDoS.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, apparently there's a lot of devices out of China that the manufacturers tend to have, like, the same passwords, like, hard-coded into these things across all, like, you can't change them. Hmm. There's just these passwords, and so they're incredibly easy to attack because the passwords never change. And security around Internet of Things needs to get way better before I start putting them in my house. Man. And before the Apple event this week, Microsoft took to the stage to announce a stunning new desktop computer, the Surface Studio. This $3,000 computer is an all-in-one style with a 28-inch 8K touchscreen display that hinges up and down so that you can draw on it like a drafting table. It's clearly aimed for creatives as it supports the Surface Pen and the new Surface Dial, which is a little puck that you can put on the screen as you're drawing to rotate and rotate to change advanced settings. Really cool. What are your thoughts on this, Tank? Have you seen videos and stuff?
I haven't seen too much on it. So I just think maybe they're, trying for some of the Mac audiences. It's pretty well known that any of the designers go Apple. Anyone yeah. who needs the high tech, high resolution, high power, all that stuff, they go for the expensive Apple machines. So maybe yeah. they're trying to take that. But I don't think there is. I also know that a lot of the software only runs on those computers, on Apple computers. So it'll be hard. Yeah. for people, I think, to switch over to PC, even if the hardware's there, because there's still not really any really solid software, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, Apple has been getting this reputation recently as abandoning its user base of Mac users because they haven't maintained the line very well, and we'll probably get to that also in the next story. But there have been so many times over the past couple of years that Microsoft has decided to do a keynote right before or right after like an Apple one, like trying to one up them. And I feel like this is the first time they actually succeeded at like presenting something that is awesome mm-hmm. and totally would appeal to the Mac user audience at a time when Apple is kind of disenfranchising their users.
Hmm.
So after the Microsoft event this week, Apple took to the stage to announce new MacBook Pros for the first time in about a year and a half. The marquee feature was also touch-related. It's called the Touch Bar, and it replaces the function keys row with an OLED touchscreen and a Touch ID sensor. Being a touchscreen, it changes based on the application you're using, with helpful buttons or scroll wheels or video timelines or whatever. They also shrank the footprint from previous models and made it thinner and lighter than the MacBook Air. Pretty great update, but the prices have also been jacked a few hundred American dollars across the board, so save those pennies.
It's now lighter than Air.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But costs more.
They actually used that tagline.
Oh, really?
Like in one of the videos, lighter than okay. Air.
Man, I should be a marketer.
I know, right? You've got a job. So these, we're going to buy one of these MacBooks. Pretty excited about it. It looks like a good product. The lineup is still weird. I know I'm talking to a Windows guy, so you probably don't care about this at all.
That's fine.
But, so we still have a low-end MacBook Air, which is years old, I think. Which they've just upgraded to have like more RAM or something. Like Apple is still does not feel like Apple is maintaining. Oh my goodness, what is happening over there?
First time I heard this, I thought there was like a national disaster going on, like a coup was started in Japan. But it's just an ambulance or a police station. They just have really loud sirens like that, and then there's a guy on a megaphone who just talks the whole time as it drives down the street. So. Probably wow. saying, get out of the way. I don't know. I can't understand it, but
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, all right then. I don't know where Sorry. I'm at. No, that's okay. I'll move on.
Yeah. I'll try not to have any more ambulances drive by. I'll talk to them about it.
All right. Yeah. You get them in shape. And finally this week, Twitter is killing off Vine. This was announced after Twitter's latest earnings call, where it announced it was laying off 9% of its staff. So this seems to be a cut made in hopes of giving Twitter focus, but it is a shame. Vine was a happy place on the internet and probably kickstarted the short-form video phenomenon that has continued with Snapchat and Facebook. Twitter said that the Vines themselves will not go away, but that the app will disappear in the coming months. If there's any good to come out of this, it's that people have remembered how awesome Vine was, and frankly that it still existed, and have been posting Vines to Twitter all week that are classic favorites and such. Which is a little ironic. Have you gotten into Vine at all?
Mm-mm. I've probably spent about a minute of my life watching Vines.
Okay. It's good. We wouldn't have the term on fleek if it wasn't for Vine.
I still don't know if I have that term.
It's okay. I don't use the term frequently either.
I'll have to find out where that came from. Google it.
Nothing like a little 6-bit section of comedy in your life every once in a while. And that's all the tech you should know this week. If we left out something you think we should have mentioned, email us at ask@techreformation.com. And actually, our email may still not be working, so email us at techreformation@gmail.com if that doesn't work. And for more tech you should know throughout the week, if we feel like posting it, follow us on Twitter at techreformation. And on to tech you should use. So this is going to be a little bit of an interesting one. This is really about the iOS app called Workflow, which basically it enables you to build little apps, so to speak, with like little Lego bricks, different things you can do inside the app and harnessing the power of other apps to kind of build this workflow. To do stuff with. But anyway, so I did a photo booth for our Fall Fun Fest last night. And the photo booth thing is very difficult to do without dedicated hardware. I've always kind of struggled to find a method that lets me take a picture, display it on a TV screen, and like kind of basically just do that. All I need. But it's really hard to find an app that does that. At least in previous years. This year has been a little bit easier. So there's a couple of different things. But what's great about Workflow is, I actually found this out by accident, was like one of the defaults when you install Workflow is that it has like a little photo booth, a little photo booth action already set up where you can take multiple pictures, display them in a like kind of format them so that they're in a strip or in a grid and then print it or whatever you want to do. But I did a lot to this. And all I used last night was an AirPrint photo printer, like just like a 4x6 photo printer, my iPhone 5S, and an Apple TV, which actually the Apple TV crapped out. But that's another story. So what I did was, so Workflow has a lot of different photo actions to work with photos. So one of the first actions I have is to take a photo, the take photo action, which allows me to set a specific number of photos to take. And you can specify front or back. I can show the camera preview or just have it take a photo, you know, by itself without you doing anything. There's a combine images block that lets you, that has two different modes. You can do it side by side, vertical or horizontal, or post them in a grid. And I elected to do it in a grid because it's a 4x6 picture, which doesn't do well with the whole like three photos in a strip. Makes it hard to format that. So I ended up doing a grid of four photos and like words at the top and words at the bottom saying GPC Fall Fun Fest. And then at the bottom, 2016. Yeah, and then I do various things with like setting the name on it, as a variable. So I set the name, so I take the grid, picture, and that's taken now and that's formatted. And this does it all automatically. And then I set the name to something and the time so that it like when I take different pictures throughout the night, it will name them all differently. So I can save them all to an iCloud Drive folder and have nothing be like, and have them be separate so that you can save multiple files there. Because if you save them with, you know, the same name, it's not going to like that. It'll keep saying, hey, you want me to replace this or cancel? I was like, No, just change the name. Oh, you replace or cancel. So I saved that to iCloud Drive. Okay, that's good. And then I have a menu set up where it will prompt me saying, okay, do you want to print this or do you want me to send this to the TV or not save it at all and just cancel everything? So for the print option, I need to overlay this picture on a picture with the words in the background and format it to a 4x6, right? And so I have a background picked out so I can overlay the grid of images on this background, this 4x6 background. And this is something that's built into workflow. It does it by itself. I'm not thinking anything about this. It just kind of goes through boom, 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 boom. And then I save that and then I have it print. And so it'll bring up the print dialog. I can press print. And then that's done. And then I can go to open this app called PhotoWall, or actually PhotoWall Camera. So there's an Apple TV app named PhotoWall that, you know, I have on the Apple TV at church. And then there's this camera app that it sends photos to the Apple TV and it, you know, puts them up on the wall very nicely. Now, apparently there's a glitch with the Apple TV app right now that is, it crashes after it gets to about a dozen photos, which really does not work when you're taking like 60, 70 of these in a night.
There's tech you should not use.
But so that ended up not working for me for the rest of the night. But, you know, that's what it goes to. And all of this happens within like a minute. So I start the workflow. It brings up the camera. I take 4 shots. And then it does what it does. It takes like 15 seconds to do all the image editing. And then it pops up the print dialog. I press print. It prints. And the photo printer is probably the longest, the thing that takes the longest in this entire process. So it's really cool. Very nerdy. And I'm sure nobody else at church is going to be able to do this should I ever die. So I have a job for life. Nice. But it's really cool. I will post a link to the workflow in the show notes so you can kind of see what I did. Check it out. If you're at all interested in getting into workflow or creating a photo booth for different events and you have an iOS device, something you should totally check out. That's about it.
Yeah, it seems really cool. Like even if I didn't have to do a photo booth, just knowing that workflow can do something like that with you basically select the workflow and then you don't press anything that you wouldn't have pressed otherwise. Like you take 4 pictures and say print.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure workflow was created. It sounds like a very multi-purpose app, not just to create photos. So
yes,
just seeing how powerful that is would make me start thinking like, oh, maybe I should Google cool things done in workflow for ideas. Or
yeah. And if you're at all interested in really getting nerdy about this, go check out macstories.net.com. I don't know, Federico Vitici, whatever his, macstories.net. Federico Vitici is an all iOS user. Like he does everything that he does on iOS. He has a website that he writes articles for constantly and
he only eats apples.
Yeah, that's right. And he can't do what he does without workflow, because it is such a powerful app. But it's one of those things, like I always hear from coders, from people that code, that you can't really learn how to code until you need it to do something for you. It's easier to learn to code if you have a goal to accomplish. And I've had workflows for a couple of years and I've played with it here and there, but I didn't really have a solution to really go for. But man, I tell you, once you have a solution that you need to solve, or once you have a problem that you need to solve, much easier to learn this stuff. So
I feel like once you solve a problem, you're like, that was awesome. And then you start realizing, oh, and I could use it for this.
Exactly.
It starts to come up with all these ideas.
Since I've created this photo booth, I've made like 4 or 5 other actions to like help with stuff at work and like just do things, have it do more things automatically for me as I'm, you know, this for the stuff that I need to do that's tedious and boring. So yeah, it's good stuff. That concludes Tech You Should Use. Our sponsor this week is Olive Tree, the Bible app. I want to focus this week on maps. So, you know that there is this split window that you can open to compare between your translation and commentary, or basically whatever you want to compare things together with. But you can also do this with stuff like maps. So, you can buy map sets on Olive Tree, and they will... And you can open your split window, and it will contextually, you know, show which maps are applicable to that particular passage of scripture, which makes it very handy for a visual learner like myself to open up and kind of see where this stuff is that this is going on. So you have lots of different various maps collections that you can get. And oftentimes maps will even come with study Bible resources. So all that stuff is available on Olive Tree. If you're interested, you can get started for free with all of their apps. You know, it's free to get started. You get some resources along with that that you can get started with. And go check out a maps resource. When you buy, use our code TECH for 20% off your purchase. Thank you to Olive Tree for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation.
The pastor's sermon is over. The final song has been sung. The benediction has been delivered. Then life happens. My name is Jeremy Lundmark, and I am the host of After the Sermon, the podcast where theology and life collide. I interview average, uncredible guests as we discuss anything and everything that you're going to face in the world today after the sermon. Politics, theology, finance, church history, apologetics, work, school, movies, music, moral dilemmas, you name it, we tackle it, giving voice to the voiceless every single week after the sermon.
And that brings us into theology from the headlines. So this week, we are going to start out by talking about Zwift. So have you heard of Zwift at all, Derek?
I have not. You explained briefly to me before the show, but please explain for our audience.
Yeah, I'll go a little more in depth because I hadn't heard of it either until I was just skimming TechCrunch articles and saw Zwift. And what it is, it's a massive multiplayer online game, but it is for indoor fitness. So the entire game takes place on a real bike. It lifts off the ground and hooks into fancy things, fancy technology things. And then right now it's on a TV. So you're facing a TV that is hooked up to whatever the system, the Zwift system. Mm-hmm. And then you select, I want to ride this race course, and you drop into it. And as you pedal, your avatar on the screen, he pedals with you, and you go through the entire race. And then it's all connected to the internet. The massive multiplayer online part of it is that other people selected, I want to do this race. And so you see them. They may be on the road slower, so you'll pass them, or you can ride beside them, and you have headphones in, so they can hear you talk. So you can say with your friend, hey, I want to go for a ride. And you're both in your homes on a bike, pedaling. And you can ride beside each other and see all this cool scenery. You can do professional grade courses that you have to apply and meet a certain goal to get in the race. Well, you can do that course.
That's cool.
And they take it further, of course, then starting to add in like the game part of it. They have races, you win rewards. They have challenges like the fastest time up this hill They have all sorts of ways to customize your avatar with bikes and jerseys, and you can unlock badges and, you know, just all the things that games use to suck you in and like, oh, I just need to, I can accomplish this if I ride 2 hours a day instead of 1 hours, 1 hour a day. And so it's using these kind of, these hooks that we hear people get sucked into World of Warcraft, and just kind of the style of all those little things that we like to collect. We like to work to get the next level or get the next thing, all the while hanging out with our friends who are trying to do it too. But it uses that to make you exercise on a bike more. So it's apparently becoming really popular and taken off. So what do you think about that, Derek?
I think that's an amazing idea for gaming exercise. Like I hear a lot about, you know, various apps that game exercise in general. But the whole MMORPG, or no, MMO, it's not an RPG. MMO is really cool. Like there's something about an MMO. I've played one or two. Only a little bit, so I'm not an expert on these things. But there's something compelling about doing something with a huge community. Like, there are people, like, these are not NPCs that you're playing against. These are, you know, either real time or, you know, or close to it, that it's just really, really fun to have that virtual community.
Now, someone, while I was doing a little bit of research for this article, this is an aside, but someone said Twitter is an MMO. He said, you know, you go on it, you post tweets and those things, and you get the short-term rewards of likes and retweets, and your ultimate kind of goal in the game is to amass more followers to your Twitter account.
Yeah.
And so it has kind of the style of... It has like a hidden MMO feature if you look at it the right way.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
I can totally see that. Would we classify all social media then maybe as like having that MMO bit?
I wonder if we could.
Yeah. That's a really interesting way of thinking about it. That makes a lot more sense of how social media is so addictive to so many people. Because once you have people interacting with you, that's cool.
Yeah, it's just that, I thought that was clever. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, and then you could go all the way to, like, I don't know, all sorts of crazy things. You could just start calling MMOs because it's stretched. But yeah, I thought it was a fun way to look at it. But I mentioned, I said currently it's on a TV in front of you because the video. So I posted an article in the show notes. There's an article, which is good to read, and there's a video, which lets you see it and helps you really see what's going on. In the video, they talk. Or maybe it was the article, one of the two. They talk about the move to virtual reality. So not only will you be immersed, like with your friends as you ride the bike by watching the TV and seeing the surroundings, once you put on virtual reality, you'll actually, your brain will think you're in there even more than right now when you're watching a TV. And so I thought that was really cool. It's going to be pretty intense. But what I wanted to talk about from this is a friend of mine, Joshua Poles. He listens sometimes, at least. Anyway, he and I, a long time ago, we had this idea for a game that we were just joking around because we're both programmers. And we were thinking it'd be fun to create like a spiritual discipline MMO. And so you level up by memorizing scripture and doing such and such. And then we were just like joking about choosing characters. You could choose a hero from the Bible, and we were talking about their strengths, and like the ultimate unlockable for Elijah would be call down fire. And it would. We just got really in depth about this thing, just all the clever ideas that we had, and they were all really silly. And things that you could do for leveling up and how to modify your character. All these, we're getting pretty in depth because it was a fun conversation. But then whenever I joked, I was like, all right, so let's do it. When are we going to start programming on it? He made a pretty interesting comment that I still have to think about occasionally. And it was what inspired this conversation was, is that a really a wise thing to do? Should should we make spiritual disciplines into a game where we're being, we have the addictive hooks that that are put into these social games? Should we have those to help us do be more spiritually disciplined?
Yeah,
because we see this, we see it's with exercise. That's awesome. Like, I've got to exercise. Might as well make it more fun and add these little things that get us excited about doing the work. Because a lot of MMOs are work. Like you think of World of Warcraft, you have to work to
a lot of grinding
to get those items. Yeah,
yeah.
But there's something about us that really likes doing that work and likes the reward we get from it. And so he was against kind of making the reward of that work gamified whenever it was applied to spiritual disciplines. What do you think about that?
That is, the whole topic around gaming spiritual disciplines is interesting, because we do have this desire to make spirituality fun. Like, that is compelling, but it's hard to know if the reasons we want to do that are God glorifying, or like if the focus is on Him or on making us happy. Like, if we're doing it to trick ourselves into glorifying God, like, I accidentally glorified God today. Hooray! Because the desire comes out of it's a good desire, but the thing is, when we gamify things, we are looking for something other than the reward of glorifying God to be our motivation, and that's a tricky thing, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so I guess like the bicycle example, like you stop making exercise and getting stronger, and at least with your thighs or whatever you work out on a bike, and being able to go further and having a healthy heart, that stops being the motivation. It becomes the badge or the record or hanging out with friends. But it's not seen as a big deal there, I guess, because I guess it doesn't really matter.
It's not a spiritual discipline. It's not something that like it affects your soul.
But when we start considering changing the motivation of praying from, I just want to spend time with my Father and show that my dependency on Him and pray for those around me, to I can mark in my game, I prayed for an hour a day and maybe get a new ability. I can definitely see some issues. Yeah.
There's an interesting, actually, this just popped into my head. I feel like everyone mentions the Babylon Bee all the time now, but there is an article, it's a satirical Christian website, if we haven't made that clear yet, but, the title being "Young Man Carefully Weighs Choice Between Fleeting Pleasure and Everlasting Joy." And this kind of plays into, I'll link that in the show notes, but it's funny as they all are. But this plays into this idea of we want that short-term reward. I mean, the short-term rewards make us happy. It's pleasing to us. And it's really hard to keep our minds on the everlasting joy that comes out of doing holy things. I don't know if it's bad to do the whole gaming the Christian life thing. It depends on your motivation. My motivation would be to get me into it far enough that I've discovered that this is incredibly fulfilling to me in the long term. And like when you get those short-term benefits rolling up to the long-term satisfaction of doing something, then that's good. I mean, it's good. Like, you know, the motivation changes from the short-term goals to the long-term stuff. Like, a long time ago, I did a Bible reading challenge with Joshua Poles, and that would be a short-term thing. Like, it's sort of gamifying the thing where we're challenging each other to, okay, we need to read, you know, 10 chapters a day. We were going through Grant Horner's Bible reading system. And we do that every day or else we have to pay each other a dollar for the day that we did not complete it. Which by the end of the month, I was really happy with how much I was getting into the Word. It was fulfilling to me, not in the sense that it was the game providing the fulfillment, but that I was getting into the Word and I was reading the Word. So I'm not against gamifying spirituality as long as the focus, as long as the person, I would say the onus, the responsibility of the motivation is more on the person participating in rather than the game developer, rather than the person creating the game to be, okay, I'm doing this for the reason of I want to be, I want to fulfill these spiritual disciplines better. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
And I also think it depends on like what you gamify as well.
Yeah.
Because like I mentioned prayer, and if you're praying for any other reason, like it can, then it's tough to say that.
That's a little more sensitive. Yeah.
But like memorizing scripture, when you're actually in the state of memorizing scripture, you're really just reading that same verse over and over again and trying to quote it. And I think there's some benefit of going it over and over in your mind. But if you have some like short-term benefit, gamified, so you could get that short-term benefit, but really you're doing it for that long-term of having that Bible verse in your head. Like I think I can see Bible memorization a safe thing to gamify, because like prayer, it's like you're only praying like for long-term benefits, but even in that moment, it's just like spending it. If I were gamifying spending time with my wife, I don't think she would approve of that very much. But yeah, and also one thing I just mentioned to Joshua that we're going to talk about this. And he pointed out as well, like one of the things that he has an issue with is even no matter what it is, I don't want to put words into his mouth, but he used flight simulators as an example. And he said, like, using flight simulators to help pilots get better is great, but anything that purposefully tries to get people addicted to it for more selfish reasons, like money, getting more people to spend more time in your game to benefit your company, he just had an issue with the concept of trying to get people addicted to something. So even if we're trying to get people addicted to our game to make them better with spiritual disciplines, it's still like... addictions is pretty much never a good word, so that's kind of where one of the reasons why he was also against it. And so I think this would fall into the realm of they're trying to get people to sucked into this cycling, and that on its own just isn't a good thing. So I thought that was an interesting viewpoint as well.
And there is there's also, another thing that popped into my head was the idea of seeker-sensitive churches a little bit. I think that can fall into this discussion too, where they're making Christianity more appealing by adding things in that or doing things that are attractive to people who aren't Christians, but is not Christianity itself. Like doing... there's so many examples out there. I could make things up, but I don't have any specific examples in my head. But doing things for the non-believer so as to make them interested in coming to church is a little bit of a bait and switch. Now it's a little different than what we're talking about, I guess, because what we're doing is like the goal is very clear, such as either memorizing scripture or praying or those things. Like the goal is clearly to do those things more, whereas with a seeker sensitive church, you're just trying to get non-believers to come and hope that they stick around long enough to dig far enough to find where what Christianity actually is and hear the gospel from someone, even though it's not being preached on stage and that sort of thing. So there's that kind of stuff too. That I would say is bad, is not good, because it's using the bait and switch tactic of here's something you should come to church for. And just kidding, that's not at all what church is about. And being dishonest in that way is not good.
Yeah, anyway. That's tough. We have here in Japan, one of the things we do is an English conversation. Let's talk is what it's called on a high school campus. But I think it's respectable in that aspect that we say there's like three tenets, I don't know, three purposes of it. One is so you can practice English and hang out with American or English native English speakers and practice. Mm-hmm. And like one of them, I can't remember what the middle one is. I haven't been going for very long. The third one is we're Christians and we think everyone should have the opportunity to know about Christ and decide, should I follow him or not? Mm-hmm. And so here, a lot of our conversation, we're going to be pointing back to Christ as we have these deep conversations about fear and so on. It's like, we're going to be talking about Jesus a lot. And that said at the beginning of every Let's Talk. So it's not really, it's like we're offering English, but we're also going to be talking about this.
Yeah, so, right. Exactly.
So there's not really that kind of like, it's an English club. And here's a Bible lesson.
Right.
There's English.
So we're teaching Jesus in English.
Right? Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah.
I don't want to dig into this too much, because there's one thing I do want to dig into, but I just want to mention one concept I thought about was kind of the middle ground between exercise and spiritual disciplines. Would be something like education, so studying, gamifying studying, and also gamifying the workplace, which I read an article that talked about both of those. Someone made his classroom an RPG, and you would level up and get special abilities. One of them was like hunt. I can't remember if you got enough experience points, you could buy the ability hunt, which allowed you to eat in class. So that's kind of some of the ideas.
Nice.
But anyway... So that's another thing where it's like taking the purpose, the kids no longer want to study to learn more. They want to study to get the ability to hunt.
Right.
And so like, is that, and I mean, you could even apply that to children's games on a tablet, you know, like they're learning, yes, but they're not excited about learning. They're excited about playing games on the tablet. So we can see the good sides and the bad sides. And so I think that's more of a middle ground where it's like even harder to weigh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would have opinions on that. Tanya and I are investigating the unschooling thing. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, which, and this is a tangent, but it would be no curriculum required. Kids just do what they want to do. Like you enable kids to explore what they want to explore and you get them excited about learning whatever they want to learn. And they will learn the basics of everything they need to know just by doing life, which is a more authentic and less tricksy, you know, like with the RPG, that's a little tricksy. That's, you know, again, if you get kids excited about something with the RPG and they're happy, you know, playing the RPG, they will learn things through that, whether you want them to or not. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I was going with that, but it's definitely interesting to think about.
Yeah. Funny on that note about learning things on accident, I used to play a game called RuneScape. Many of our listeners know what that is. And always to this day, whenever I see a willow tree, I think of RuneScape because I've spent many hours cutting them down in RuneScape. But I had seen a willow tree in RuneScape before I knew what they were in real life.
Yeah.
But whenever I saw one in real life, I was like, I know what that is.
Yeah. See, that's pretty cool.
I learned something.
Exactly. You can learn so many things through video games. Like the people who vilify video games as just rotting kids' brains is ridiculous. Kids learn so much through video games, especially stuff like Minecraft, which is hugely popular. There's so many things you can learn through Minecraft. Yeah. You can learn like the basics of coding through Minecraft or like... architectural design. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that also develops like the artistic part of the brain on how to build things and solve problems. And reflexes and shooters.
Right.
I heard that. Yeah. But anyway, so I think the very last thing I wanted to talk about is With anything that we get sucked into, that's sinful. So in this case, talking about the addictiveness of massive multiplayer online games. There's a sign of something good in us that was corrupted, I guess. And so I guess a simple example would be lust. The good part of us is that God made us to have a sexual desire that's good for one woman to be fulfilled in marriage and point to Christ in the church.
Yep. It's very good.
Then it gets skewed by us using pornography and having affairs and sleeping around and all that stuff. So what I'm getting at is I'd be interested to hear what you think. And I personally wasn't able to really pin down something. I had a few guesses, so that's why I was interested to hear what you thought. In what is the good thing that can be found if we examine the addictiveness of video games? Like, why does our flesh fall in love with this concept of this MMO where you work to gain these rewards and unlock things and level up and get more powerful and get new gear, all in the midst of people who are doing the same thing and also trying to level up and get new gear, and you can help each other out or fight each other or compete, whatever. Like, what do you think that points to?
Well, I mean, it reflects a tendency we have in real life to feel good about accomplishing things, right? I mean, even just fixing, like, fixing a leaky water pipe, like, that you may have never done before, but you consulted someone, or you consulted the internet, or, you went to your favorite home improvement store, and, like, you went through all these different steps to figure out how to solve this small thing, is incredibly rewarding. And that happens a lot in MMOs. It happens a lot in video games in general. But the community aspect in MMOs, I think, is why it's so huge, probably. And again, I don't play MMOs, so take my opinion with a grain of salt. But community is really important, whether you like people or not. You're always going to have people around you, and God made us to live in community. So it reflects the reason MMOs, I think, are so big is it reflects real life in a setting that we will never be able to be in. So we can explore an entirely different world in kind of the same way that we explore real life. And there's just so much more imagination there. What are your thoughts?
I think that's good. I read one article that was about talking about, like, the work of MMOs and what makes them so addictive. And it was like, it's almost like having a second job. Like, people make it, they get off their work and they go to this work that is so fulfilling for whatever reason, and that they have to spend so many hours to get these rewards. And it said, its point was kind of what we're talking about, that MMOs have already found a way to get people to pour. I think it said in 7 years, people have spent 53 million years of time in it collectively. Wow. In World of Warcraft. I can't remember if I said that. And so it's like MMOs have already figured out how to get people to pour their lives into it. And so workplaces should figure out how to do the same to encourage their workers. I think that concept of working is good.
And continually advancing. Like, I think that's part of the reason people don't find work fulfilling, if they're just doing the same thing all the time, or there's nothing new to stimulate growth in your brain, that is very unsatisfying. But with an MMO, they're always, trying to release new things to keep people entertained and keep people working and keep people doing new things.
And then I think the social aspect, it lets people, like, there's a very clear sign of how much you've advanced. Like, you can tell by that guy's armor that, wow, he has all the best stuff.
Yeah.
And if you right click on him and check stats, you can see, oh, he's max level in this, and he's really high level in this. And he would probably, and then you get on a team and you're useful. Like, oh, I'm the white mage. I can heal everybody. If you didn't have me, then you all just would have died in 5 seconds. And so, yeah, there's a very clear sign of where you stand in your advancements.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, like, I guess, how is that kind of reformed, that concept in the, like, what do we as Christians do instead to fulfill that? Just like we talked about with lust. I mean, instead we fulfill that in loving our wife well, and glorifying God through it with that picture, as well as just praising him. So how do we instead fulfill this in a godly way instead of going and getting addicted to MMOs?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. Nothing's coming to the top of my head at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I say for me, I just thought of this whenever I asked the question. I was like, you know, I was really into RuneScape, like poured hours of my life into it.
Uh-huh.
And what pulls me away from it, or pulls me back to it. Sometimes I do feel drawn to go back. And what pulls me away for me is finding the purpose in life. I think, and then this is for me, I found a lot of purpose in RuneScape. I always knew my goal, get to level 99 in all the stats. That was always my goal. And there was always, I could make plans to get there. And they were like plans with branching paths. And I knew how many hours it would take to accomplish such and such task.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just like, there's a feeling of purpose and a feeling of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my testimony is about how I looked like, what is the purpose of life? What am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And then God saved me. And then he brought me on a mission trip. And he said, here's what I'm calling you to do. Here's your purpose, to glorify me and to find those who don't know me and show mm-hmm. them what life is all about. And now I'm living in Japan because like he gave me purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a lot of what video games does, is it gives us a new purpose, one that's easy, fulfillable, with really nice rewards and shiny lights to keep you, and good music to keep you addicted the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just remembering our purpose in Christ, whatever that is, and following that instead of MMOs is one way to fulfill that desire, I think.
All right. Well, do you have any recos for us this week?
Well, actually, I've been playing this great MMO recently, Final Fantasy 14.
Nice.
Not really.
Oh, okay.
That was just a joke based on the conversation. Although I should clarify, I wouldn't say video games or MMOs are bad, of course.
Okay, right.
Yes. In moderation, of course.
Right.
My wife is actually playing Kingdom Hearts 2 right next to me. So, so I'll reco that, Kingdom Hearts 2 or
right.
1 or any of them. They're one of my favorite video game series. So if you haven't gotten around to them, PS3 has them, all these like 1.5 and 2.5 and 2.8 that has all of them collected into the PS3 instead of separated across every video game system known to man.
Nice.
So yeah, check them out.
I do actually have a PS3 in the house, so perhaps we shall look into that.
Yeah.
Have to see if I can get it on Amazon. All right. So for my reco this week, I am going to recommend Matthew Parker's new album, Adventure. It's very good. Go download it. There is actually the intro of our podcast is off of one of the songs that's off of this album. It's called Tidal Wave. It's a great album. Go download it. Go enjoy it. It's wonderful. My daughter loves, you know, kind of bop into it. She can't quite dance yet, but you know, when she holds onto a table and just kind of bops a little bit, it's adorable. So if you have an adorable daughter, have her bop to Matthew Parker's Adventure. And if you would like to contact us, you can connect with us in our Slack team you can sign up at slack.techreformation.com. We would love to have you in there to chat about various things. Make fun of Apple while it does its keynote every week, or not every week. It does its keynote every once in a while. All that good stuff. We have so many channels in there with various different topics. So we might even have a sports. Do we have a sports one? I'm certainly not a part of it if we do.
Yep, I wouldn't be a part of it either.
But if you're into
sports, we could make one.
We can totally make one. Just go on there and say, hey, I want a sports channel. And you can hang out in there with, you know, all your sports buddies and sports it up.
Since we don't have a sports channel, you might have to bring sports buddies, but
yes, yeah,
maybe there are some hidden sports people in our channels.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure there's someone.
Yeah, you can also visit our website, techreformation.com. There's past shows that you can search by topic, or you can listen to them / re-listen to them all.
Indeed. We are a part of the Theology Mix Network. You can find us on their website or the Master iTunes feed, which have both links down in the show notes.
And lastly, we'd love for you to review us on iTunes if you like us, or I guess you can just review us no matter how you feel about us. We'd love to get some feedback from you. And yep. Also recommend us on Overcast so that all the bad podcasts can be off the top five and all the good podcasts can be on the top five.
There's actually a bunch of good podcasts up there now.
Oh, really? Gotcha. I don't have Overcast, so I haven't been paying attention to
it. Yeah, I know. but keep recommending us. It helps us stay up there and get found by more people. And share us with a friend, if you would be so kind. Word of mouth is probably the best way of helping us get out there to more people. As always, the music is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. Check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. Buy that new album. It's good. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.